Happy Michaelmas, everyone.
Thank you very much, Boyd. And thank you for being our guest today. Thank you. So, Boyd, I will give you the mic now as you give us the story of your spiritual journey in this life.
Okay. I'm going to read fast because kind of a lot of words here. hopefully it's fun, though. I was born in 1960 and grew up in a small town called Waterville in central Washington state. It's only about 1,000 people in it, kind of a small town. My father owned a grocery store, and from the age of 11 until I graduated from high school and moved out for college, I worked in my father's grocery store during summer vacations, Saturdays and after school, and at times when I wasn't involved in school sports. Working in the grocery store was very good for me. I was a very shy, introverted little kid, and working in the store helped me learn a lot of key social skills while interacting with the customers. My father never forced me to work in the store. It seems now as though I probably planned it that way and did it myself, chose to myself before this life so that I'd stay busy and out of trouble. It also got me started early on what has become a rather prolific work ethic. My mother's parents lived nearby on a wheat ranch, and I also spent a lot of time with my grandparents working on the wheat ranch and fishing and hunting with my grandfather. I was always really fond of guns, and I spent a lot of time in my early life hunting and simply practicing shooting targets at long ranges. Hold over from other lives, I think. We always went to Sunday school and then to the main service every Sunday at our Lutheran church. I sang soprano in the church choir until my voice changed in my early teens, and our choir director, Jane Hensel, referred to me as my great soprano. My memories of going to church as a child are many. I remember trying to listen and participate in the service, but being bored by the actual ceremony, and instead found myself creating fantasies in my mind or gazing at churchgoers. This is because I found as a child that when I stared at people for some time, I would begin to see layers of color swirling around them, and I seemed to just know all kinds of things about them when I did that. I also remember my first communion. I had a great deal of anticipation of a dramatic personal spiritual experience, and I was deeply disappointed when I did not feel or experience anything. In my soul memory, I seemed to remember what a Holy Spirit experience is like, and for some reason, I could never find it in any church experience as a child. Where I did find that deep spiritual experience was from reading certain books. I was drawn to psychic stuff at about age 14 or 15 and was not afraid to try a lot of different things, like astral projection, automatic writing, remote viewing, etc. But then the first time I tried a kind of meditation where I simply sat in stillness and tried to love everyone in the world, I was startlingly drawn into a kind of samadhi experience, and I found myself weeping and forever changed. In addition to the books on psychic practices and phenomena, I found Edgar Cayce, and I got a lot of very helpful perspective from those books. Around age 17, with no prompting or guidance, I bought a copy of the I Ching and practiced reading a paragraph at a time and then pondering it in stillness, attempting to divine the deeper meanings, probably from watching episodes of Kung Fu or something like that. Anyway, so as a teenager, I did find some spiritual experience on my own, but it was only enough to make me desire a lot more. And one of my main challenges is that I could not find a single person with whom I could discuss all of this. My parents took a very dim view of the books and psychic explorations I was obviously engaged in. I tried to explain to my friends what I was finding out about reincarnation, auras, remote viewing, etc., but everyone I know either would ridicule me or simply was not willing to talk about that crazy stuff with me. So in this sense, I felt alone in my seeking, but I stayed busy with school. I played football, basketball, track and field, and summer baseball, and I worked in the grocery store, so I had a pretty full life. When I departed for college, I decided to share an apartment with one of my childhood friends who I'd spent a great deal of time with riding motorcycles and hunting. Within the first week of moving in together, I discovered that my roommate had a circle of friends who used marijuana and other drugs on a pretty regular basis. I had never tried that stuff before, but I was never afraid to try things, and soon I was engaged in this other kind of mind-altering on a daily basis. Before this, I had been an excellent student in school, often getting all A's in high school. Now in college and studying chemistry, math, and physics, I found that I started out strong, but as I continued to party with my roommates and my friends, my grades went down, down, down. Also, I was constantly trying to penetrate into deeper levels of consciousness using LSD, mushrooms, and other kinds of stuff. After some years of this, though, I began to realize that I was simply addicted to many of these drugs, and I was not moving forward with the kind of spiritual experiences that I constantly longed for. Near the end of my second year of college, I found a young woman who I became romantically involved with and eventually moved in with her and out of the party house with the guys. It seemed as though we were drawn to each other very strongly, and although various people I knew warned me against it, I chose to marry her. We had a little girl about a year after our wedding, and during this time, I was still attending college, working like a madman, and also still using various drugs nearly every day. After some years of this, while attending the University of Washington in Seattle, I got a flyer in the mail advertising informal night classes at the university, which were taught by people in the community. I was immediately drawn to one of these classes that's called The Path to Your Ascension. I had been reading a lot of theosophy books and continuing in my spiritual quest, but I was really discouraged by the situation of my drug use. I had tried to quit using drugs a number of times, but circumstances and weakness always led me to fall back. When I attended the first class of The Path to Your Ascension, I immediately recognized that this would be my next thing. A very charismatic man named James Volbrocht was teaching us, and I often stayed late after class, walking with him and peppering him with questions. I found out from him about the Summit Lighthouse, and I immediately purchased and read a number of their books and began to attend prayer services at the local Summit Lighthouse study group. I was easily drawn to what they called decrees, and I practiced using these whenever I could. One day, I was giving the prayer to Archangel Michael and felt a little sorry for myself because I still had not been completely able to stop using various drugs. I stopped giving the decree and I asked the Archangel to help me be rid of the drugs. Then I sat on the floor, closed my eyes, and I expected some help to come. I went into a trance-like state and was unaware of my body or the room around me. I was standing in a kind of a blank space, except that there was a large monster in front of me. It looked like a long dragon thing, but was very smelly and menacing to me. I had no idea what to do. I realized that this is tobacco, meaning that this monster was the essence of my tobacco addiction. And I really wanted to kick that habit, but mentally, I did not know what I should do. Then I looked down for a moment, and I was startled to see a shining lightsaber-like sword in my hand. Never heard of anything like this before. I used it to cut into the tobacco monster, and it began to shriek and attack me, but I just kept hacking away at it, vaporizing it wherever my sword touched. After several adrenaline-filled minutes of this, it was completely gone. I was beginning to get the idea, and so I said to myself, "Where is the marijuana monster?" From my right side came a big spidery-looking monster, equally scary but seemingly more cunning than the tobacco monster. I dissolved this one with my sword also, but it took longer, and he tried to hide from me and used various tricks. Then I systematically went down the list of all the drugs that had been recurring in my life, each one parading into view and going to its demise. The whole experience seemed to take about 20 minutes, and I'm sure I was helped by Archangel Michael in this, but it awakened soul memories of spiritual skills that I already had too. I gathered up all the drugs I had in the house and flushed them all down the toilet, free now. At this time in my life, I had never learned anything from people about astral entities, and all I had was personal experience. I applied to be a keeper of the flame with the Summit Lighthouse and began to attend the Saturday night decree services. I really enjoy the battle-like experiences I had while giving these decrees because I think I've been a soldier in quite a few recent lives. I found that I had a knack for the decrees, and I surprised the leaders there by offering to lead the decree services. They told me I should probably just attend the services for some months before being the leader. But as soon as they would let me, I began to lead decree services, and I've gained a lot of spiritually over the years by being in that kind of nexus spot, often feeling that the Masters work with me to keep things both fiery and focused. My wife was mostly neutral about all of this at the start, and I was careful never to expose her to anything of my work with the Summit Lighthouse or to allow it to intrude in our family life. But after a couple of years, I think the pressure of the light of my private prayer work had caused a steady shift in the balance of things in our household. She could never explain why any of it was a problem to her, but one day she simply sprung an ultimatum on me: leave the Summit Lighthouse right now, or else leave me and our family. I was surprised, but she was even more surprised when I responded that nobody had the right to determine another spiritual path and that I would be packing my things. She was very accustomed to getting her way, and this was one of the first times she had ever completely failed in wielding this influence, I think, over anyone. We were separated for about a year before my wife did the work of lining up our divorce. Meanwhile, I was still attending college, working, and eventually living in the Summit Lighthouse study group home there in Seattle. At that time, there was nobody in the group who was willing to teach the ongoing night class, The Path to Your Ascension, the one that I had taken, so I offered to teach it. The leaders there were a little concerned because I was so new and had never even attended Summit University, but they relented and let me teach the six-week night class twice. The first time I had 23 students, and the second time I had 33 students. One of the leaders of the local group, James Drew, came a couple of times to my classes to make sure I was not off the rails with what I was teaching. I think he was satisfied that I was with the program, though. James and I accomplished a lot together at the study group focus during those years, and he is a true brother to me. Soon after this, I finally went to Summit University on the Camelot campus in Southern California. After that, I had originally planned to move back to Seattle and pick up my life there again. But an old friend of mine, Janet Little from Seattle, was working on the staff there at headquarters, and she approached me on one of my last days on campus and asked me to consider staying and working on staff. After thinking it over for a day, I realized that it was probably the right path for me, and I adjusted my life to this new track. I had to pay child support, pay off debts from my marriage, and cover my own expenses as a new staff member, and I did this by washing windows and cleaning houses several days per week. For my staff job, I was assigned to work in the print shop and to become a printing press operator. This became my main job for about 15 years after that. I learned to operate both small and very large sophisticated printing presses, and I learned all about the other aspects of the printing industry. I moved to Montana about a year later when the Summit Lighthouse headquarters was moved here, and I began to work full-time as a printing press operator. The only break from this was when we spent a year building the fallout shelters. I worked as a crew chief, connecting the pieces of shelters together and then backfilling carefully around them so that there were not would not be damage due to settling of the soil. I was grateful then for all my football and other sports early in life because it helped me build a strong body for this strenuous outdoor work. Just before building the fallout shelters, we had a period of time for all the staff people to shift from their monastic mode of life and to look around to see if they knew anyone who they felt would be they would like to spend their lives with. So if you were attracted to someone, you could write a letter to Mother, ECP, and get El Moria's take on whether this was a good move for your soul and whether he would continue to sponsor you as a couple and as a chela. Of course, after writing such a letter and gaining permission, it was not a foregone conclusion that he or she would accept your invitation to a date either. Anyway, I had already been a father and a husband for 5 years in this life, and I felt that it was my path to be a householder and a parent. I had benefited a lot from 5 years of being single and celibate since then, though. But I felt things shifting in me at the time, and I wondered if there was anyone here for me. After getting my thinking out of the way and using my feelings, I realized that I really liked this young lady named Nancy Denning. We had staff dances from time to time, and when I waltzed with Nancy, I noticed that she was a great dancer, and I felt very safe and at my best when I was with her. So I wrote and got permission to approach her, and she said yes, she would spend some time with me and see what came of it. The only time we had available was during lunchtime and near other people, so we really never had much of a date. Years later, Nancy told me that from the first time she saw me earlier than this, she recognized me and felt that we would be together. Evidently, she was waiting for me to get some of my rough edges smoothed off by staff life. After just a few weeks of eating lunches together, I told her I would like to marry her, and she accepted. After our wedding, my work, which was 50 miles away on the shelter construction site, began, and Nancy and I didn't see much of each other since I had to stay on location a certain number of days per week. So for the first year of our marriage, it was only a little bit of getting to know you, and we were meant to be because we're still really in love and doing well together after now it's 27 years. We have two really wonderful children, Aaron, age 22, and Sophie, age 18. And I have a daughter named Jessica from my first marriage who is age 36. Yeah, I have a 36-year-old kid. My next life began around 1996 when the Summit Lighthouse decided to cease operating an in-house printing operation. This meant the end of our jobs for both Nancy and I, who we worked on staff in the graphic arts department. Concurrently, though, my fellow staff printing buddies, Andrew Field and Michael McNicholas, had been conspiring. Andrew had left staff some time before this and was, and after working as a car mechanic for a while, had bought a franchise for car mechanic fluids and machines, which he had driven into a very successful business. So with Andrew's capital and borrowing power, Michael convinced Andrew to call me and form a little print shop of our own. We called it Express Color Printing, and one of our first customers was the Summit Lighthouse. So we were printing some of the same stuff that we had been printing for many years. We bumped along with building this business for a couple of years before Andrew put two and two together and had an idea. I had been the first webmaster for the Summit Lighthouse. I didn't mention that, but I was the webmaster that built the first website for the Summit Lighthouse, building and maintaining their first website for some years. After that, Michael got into web creation, Michael McNicholas, also, and we teamed up to build a number of commercial websites to make some side money. Some of our early customers were John Fanuzzi and Golden Ratio Woodworks and David Lewis with Paradise Prints. Andrew thought that maybe we could sell commercial printing over the internet. So we three guys conspired after work from some weeks after this, working out the basic idea of how we could do this. I was in charge of figuring out a way to allow us to take layouts from Microsoft Word, Publisher, CorelDRAW, and other common PC programs and actually get those layouts into printing presses and printing plates. This part took me a month to figure out and was considered impossible by most of the industry at that time. But what I put together as a combination of different technologies is the essence of the method and workflow, which is still being used by printingforless.com. That's the name we named the company later, nearly 20 years later. Over the next 14 years, we grew our business from those first three to over 200 employees and over $30 million a year in revenue. I was the vice president in charge of technical innovation, customer service, and our sales force. Then my next life began. I had been friends with David Lewis for a long time during our time on staff, and later I worked extensively with him by creating and maintaining his business website and doing network and computer maintenance for him. We occasionally went to lunch together and talked about business and spiritual topics. One day in the winter of 2004-2005, David invited me to lunch, and we met and talked about a variety of things. Then David nervously began to tell me about writing some things which he felt were Jesus speaking to him. I think he was concerned about losing our friendship if I rejected the idea of him receiving direct info from the masters. I put him at ease immediately, assuring him that I accepted what he was doing, even though I had not even read anything yet. I told him that secretly I felt that I had communicated telepathically with El Moria, Jesus, and others many times in my meditation practice. I asked him if there was a chance of this becoming some kind of organized effort, and he lit up and said yes, it was to be called the Heart Center. We walked back to his business, and before I continued back to my workplace, I told him that I would help him in any way I could. Later, David sent me some transcriptions of his first dictations, and it was no surprise to me and Nancy that we felt the master's radiation while reading them. Trains. I immediately began to work with Stefan Delaney and Damian Kletter, who also were interested in building a first-class website for the Heart Center. I had always enjoyed leading decrees with my brother-in-law, Andrew Blumenschein, and some months before this, I had learned how to create streaming internet audio broadcasts of our decree sessions in Andrew's basement, which many disenfranchised Keepers of the Flame would join in with. So I built a computer, AV setup, and streaming audio account, which would allow us to do this same live streaming of our services from Wellspring, where our morning rosary services were being held. From then on, we have been a lively virtual Heart Center community, praying together and gradually enabling many other heart friends to share their prayer services as broadcasters. For these past 10 years now, I have served as the team leader of our multimedia team, coordinating the talents of many people and continuing to enable the Heart Center to thrive and grow as a community through the use of modern communication technology. I was invited to join the Council of the Heart Center, and I've been on the council since around 2006 or so. I was the president for a year or so at one point. Then in 2010, Michael McNeil, our executive director, indicated that he would be leaving that position. After some debate personally and at the council level, we decided to hire me in that position, and I've been there since then. The main changes have been that I've been blessed with a number of co-directors, Dee Stewart, Deborah Timberlake, and now Claire Brown. It's really been great working with these folks as a team instead of trying to do it alone, which was that way for the first year or so. Around 2007 or so, I began to have something of an identity crisis. Due to my continuing meditation work, I had awakening within me, an increasing feeling of my spiritual identity, but it was mostly a kind of general feeling. I knew almost nothing of any past lives, and I had no idea of my twin flame, arguably the other half of me. I had only feelings of the more, but no detail. I knew only Boyd as myself. I longed to be integrated with the larger me. One day, I simply determined for myself that I would figure out the truth about who, where was my twin flame. At that time, in my daily meditation practice, a master had repeatedly directed me to press myself up into the highest atmic levels that I could achieve and then to abide there. After being encouraged to do this for a dozen or more times, I began to be more lucid and at ease with this new part of me. I reasoned with myself that at this level of consciousness, I should be able to simply look sideways at who was there to discover who and where she was. Well, I did this, and I had a kind of shock when I found her. It was kind of like sitting on a park bench, glancing over and finding a person there when you thought you were alone. And she seemed to be 200 feet tall. That was the experience. I asked her many questions, and I was convinced of the authenticity of the experience. I kept all this to myself. Then about a year later, David called me out of the blue and asked if I'd like to know who my twin flame is. I said yes, and he told me. I did not tell him of my personal experience, but all the info fitted together, and more to the point, I have gained more of a sense of who I am from learning who she is. We are much more of a team now. I feel more whole. And that is the happy outcome. At a spiritual level, I can easily say that the spiritual itch I had as a teenager has been more than met in these last 33 years. First, by my chelaship in the Summer Lighthouse, and now even more monumentally by my servitorship in the Heart Center. My primary mode is that of kind of a mystic. It used to drive me a bit crazy that I was born this time into such a kind of solid, grounded, Germanic farmer worker type body, which to me did not afford me with the kind of spiritual sensitivity that I really desired at a soul level. However, God always provides, of course. When I was around 24 years old, I had a number of experiences while passionately giving the rosary, in which the Kundalini moved very powerfully in me. It was very difficult for me during the next year or two for all the reasons that they give, meaning that when the Kundalini is really tearing around inside of you, if you allow yourself to feel any kind of depression or anger or anything, it gets very magnified. That's what I meant by that. I began to have the sensitivity, but the price is that you are subject to a lot of visions and astral stuff, which most people are not equipped to deal with and don't want to deal with. I was forced at this time by necessity to learn to meditate. I simply had to learn to control my mind and the faculty of the attention. Otherwise, life with this sensitivity can be impossible. I purposely did not read any books on meditation. I didn't know why at the time, but I think it was so that my learning would be entirely empirical and not clouded by other ideas. I simply committed to showing up for 1.5 hour each day for silent meditation, and I began each meditation by asking Jesus to place his diamond heart over mine and to teach me to love as he loves. That's it. From there, Jesus and eventually many others taught me the science and art of meditation as it would best fit a guy who grew up eating Frosted Flakes and watching Bugs Bunny on TV, meaning short attention span. Later in life, I have looked at some books on meditation, and I find in them much of what I learned directly from the masters. In some cases, I think they showed me some things which are uniquely useful during these times and for people like us who were born in the West and who have very short attention spans. I feel that what I've gradually learned is something which is infinitely valuable to the souls on earth who are seeking freedom in these challenging days. So I plan to continue to write and teach about this mystical path that I've had passed to me in order to help as many people as will listen and apply it. And I plan to continue to help David in any way possible to build the Heart Center and to serve our community. So many, many words. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Boyd. We are very grateful for hearing your story.
Many, many words. Yeah.
And your great truthfulness and sharing with us what happened and all the different cycles you've been in. I liked how you said, and my next life, and my next life.
Many lives. I think I've had like about 4 lives. And I know many of you who are listening to me, you feel the same way. So it's interesting. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you very much, Boyd. We appreciate that. And so glad that you're in the mode of teaching and writing and passing along the information you have gotten.
Yeah. I haven't done as much writing as I'd like to, but I'm hoping to.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
God bless all of you there here who are conducting the service there with Kathleen. See you guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Boyd. Bye-bye.